Welcome to Built to Go, a van life podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Wagg, coming to you from the College of Curiosity. This time it's episode 298, and we're going to talk about... okay, yeah, I screwed up. I did. I'm sorry. I'm going to own it, and we're going to talk about it, and we're going to talk about other things, too. So the deal is, I had a lovely conversation with a woman named B. She is a mental health professional. Way long ago, boy, March or so, and we had the conversation. It was great. Got a recording, and I was like, I'm going to hold on to this, and I'm going to use this at a time when I can't record my own podcast. And this is that time. I announced last week that here it is. And I went to edit it, and it is blank. The entire interview is blank. The time is there. Something happened in the recording process, and all of that is gone. It is lost. And I'm feeling a little bit defeated because this is the second time in three attempts that I've done an interview that has just fallen apart due to technology. And yeah. However, I did promise that I would have a podcast for you next week, and I'm going to take a moment, not a moment, probably a many, many moments to create one for you right now. But it is not going to be in the normal format because I haven't prepared for that. So instead, I'm going to take a whole bunch of different things that have just been kind of hanging out there and go through them all. But first, if you'll indulge me for just a moment, I want to read a poem, a speech, whatever you want to call it, some words by Teddy Roosevelt. And this was first introduced to me by Team Rubicon, actually, where this is printed on a bunch of their materials. But let me read this to you. Again, this is Teddy Roosevelt, and then we will proceed from there. It is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles, or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat. Okay, that's some pretty haughty rot language there, and I am not suggesting that this poem is applying to me because I am not not making equivalence between a podcast and whatever Teddy was referring to when he said that. However, there is a sentiment here that I think is valuable not only for what I'm doing but also for what you're doing. If you are someone who's exploring van life, take these words to heart, because what matters is you are making the effort to do this. And whether you fail or succeed, just that effort to try to do something has value. And even though I failed at this interview, and I failed at another interview that I'm actually going to try to redo at some point, hey, I did it. I tried. I utterly failed. I am that man in the arena, in the dust with a bull's horn gored into his side. And okay, taking it a little too far. But anyway, in the sentiment of being someone who is willing to step in the arena, and which means fail, you have to be willing to fail to do that. I am going back into the arena and doing this podcast today. Okay. Again, this is not some kind of grandiose gesture here. I just think the concept is interesting that if you let the fear of failure stop you from trying, that's worse than failure. Okay, I have notes here. What I have, it's literally, it's just a big bunch of different topics all over the place to talk about that have been kind of sitting there hoping to find their way into an episode and just haven't. And so now we're going to go through a whole bunch of them. First, though, a little bit of, I don't know if humor is the word, but kind of a funny situation and also a tragic one. So this is from a Jalopnik, and apparently somebody went to a gas station, and they were thrilled to see that the gas station had a dump station, because, you know, who wouldn't be? Dump stations are found at some gas stations. There's a Love's down in LaSalle County that I use that has a dump station. It's not free, but still, it's very handy to have. And these folks took advantage of it. You know, they dumped their tanks, cleaned them out, and they were like, wow, this is great. Glad to have that sorted out. And then they found out that this gas station, well, they don't have a dump station. So where did they actually dump their waste? They dumped it into the fill tank of the diesel tanks of the gas station. So this gas station, this poor gas station, is in Montrose, Colorado. They now have this massive tank filled with black tank effluent and diesel. And at the price of diesel today, I'm going to bet someone's going to figure out a way to save that diesel, but I'm glad it's not me. And so all the pumps at this gas station are shut down, at least for diesel. And yeah, this just happened. This article is from June 4th. And anyway, a little humorous, a little tragic. I'm really curious as to how that happened, but wow. So there you go. Another thing, the topic of RV bidets has come up, and I saw a new one. And the original request I had from Brian was that he wanted a bidet for his RV that was not only practical, but was also warm. And that's a pretty steep request there, because, okay, the bidet part's not too hard, it's just water, but warm water? The logistics of that is kind of difficult, because the systems at home that you have that have warm water, some of them are hooked up to the hot water line, but others are electric, where they will have a heater in them that heats up the water. And if you think about it, that's actually the most practical, because the water in the pipes is going to be cold until the hot water gets to it. So even if you hook your bidet up to a hot water tank, it's going to take time for that hot water from the tank to get to the bidet. And where does that water go while you're waiting? You can see the problem. So you really want a bidet that heats its own water so it's available instantly as you want it. And, well, I just saw this new product, and I have not tried this, but I thought I'd mention it. It's called the Traveler's Bidet by Porta Bidets. And it's a portable bidet. You don't actually permanently hook it up to your RV, but it's close to that. It fits under the toilet seat, and it has a nozzle. And then on the floor, there is a tank with a plus and minus button. And you activate it, and it sprays water. And the trick here would be, if you want warm water, put warm water in it. It has its own reservoir. So I think this is the closest solution I've seen to a hot water bidet that's effective and practical in an RV. And this would fit in any RV or basically any house. It's a little tank, sits next to the toilet, has a hose that comes off of it that fits into a plastic thing that goes under the toilet seat. Now you'd have to see if it fit your toilet. You know, a lot of RVs have all different things, but to my looking at this thing, I think this would work for most RV toilets. I don't think it would work for a cassette toilet, because of the way seats on cassette toilets are. The seats on cassette toilets tend to be molded and fit tightly onto the toilet. There's no gap. And the seats on, say, porcelain toilets, there's a gap, and this thing lives in that gap. Possibly you could modify it. I don't know. But that's something to consider. So if you actually do want to have a warm water bidet in your RV or your camper van, you can probably do it with this. It's about $150. But for about $10, you can get a handheld one that you can also fill with warm water, and that might be even a better solution. So if you are curious about this, go ahead and Google Traveler Bidet by Porta Bidets. It's just one word. And you will find this, and who knows, maybe this will lead to competitor products and the prices will come down. Okay, Dominic sent a note that was very interesting. He saw this thing that looked cool to him, which was a DeWalt, well, cooler. But what do we mean by cooler? So this is a device that will keep your drinks cold, but also blows cold air. And it's basically a cooler. Just imagine a Yeti cooler or whatever, filled with ice. There's a fan in it, and the fan blows on the ice, and the cool air comes out of a hose. But it's also got ice in it. But the trick is here that this thing runs off of a normal DeWalt battery. So if you're someone who's invested in the DeWalt tool world, you probably have some of these batteries. And hey, you could have air conditioning and cooling with those batteries. Why install your own electrical system in your RV to use this? Well, I wrote back to Dominic and I said, I'm not thrilled about this. And the reason is this: it's $299, so that's expensive to start with. It's just a cooler with a fan. That's all it is. It is going to blow cool, moist air wherever it blows out, and it's not going to do it for that long. You could not air condition your rig with this. You could get a nice cool breeze for your pet maybe for a little while. And I think its intended purpose is that on a job site, you would keep drinks in here, and then if someone was on a break, they could sit next to this thing and have a cool breeze in their face. But that's it. And for $300, that's just, I don't think that's worth it. Plus, you have to have a way to charge that battery, so you're going to have some sort of electrical system anyway. So to me, it makes a lot more sense just to get a 12-volt compressor fridge. And if you really want AC, look at the EcoFlows and the Zero Breezes and such, because they might be your best option. Or see if you can just get a 5,000 BTU regular household and fit that in there. Or if you're building a fancy rig, look at a mini split. Those all make more sense. So Dominic actually wrote me back after this and said he found another cooler that he thought was better. And it's by Makita. So, you know, okay, DeWalt's got theirs, Makita's got to have theirs, you know, maybe Ryobi's going to come out with one, I don't know. The Makita does something a little bit more. It's a cooler, and it does not blow air. This one is basically a refrigerator that runs off their 18-volt X2 LXT lithium-ion batteries. So that's an interesting thing. Maybe you have a source of these batteries and you have a way to charge them and you wanted a fridge in your rig and you could just keep plugging these batteries in. However, there is a key line in this here. It's cooler and warmer. Whenever you see a refrigerator that can warm your food, you know that it is a Peltier device. And that is bad for van life. These things are solid-state devices that when you add electricity to them, one side gets hot and one side gets cold. And because of that, you can cool something off or you can heat something up. And the way these things work in this application, which is just basically a cooler with one side of it having one of these Peltier devices on it, is that it switches the polarity. And that's what makes it hot or cool, because when you switch the polarity, the opposite side gets hot or cool. This all sounds great. It doesn't even, I think this one does have a fan to distribute temperature, but generally they don't need fans. And I actually use one of these things. I have one in my Airstream, a little one, that is designed to dehumidify. Rather than cool anything off, the side of the plate that gets cold has air blowing over it, and if there's any moisture in the air, it condenses out and it's saved in a can, and yeah, it does a little bit to help dehumidify the Airstream. So I have that one. I have that too. But this is not going to be suitable for van life, because one thing about Peltier devices is they use an incredible amount of power. They use so much more power than a 12-volt compressor fridge, and they don't have thermostats. They're either on or off, and because of that, you can't trust them to keep your food cool. In real-world tests, what happens is these things will cool the temperature 30 degrees Fahrenheit below the ambient temperature. So if it's 70 degrees, you'll get the temperature down to 40 in your cooler, which might be fine. But if it's 90 degrees, you get the temperature down to 60, which is not fine. That is bad. 60 degrees is where all the bacteria and stuff are having a field day and getting ready to make you sick. So I can't recommend either of these devices. And Dominic, I've written you back, but if there's some other way you want to go, I'm happy to consider what you're looking at. I think a lot of people looking at van life see these Peltier device coolers, they're usually called, and they're either very inexpensive or there's something appealing about them because they come in all different form factors and they can warm too. Well, that's got to be good, right? No, actually, these things are terrible. A lot of first-time van lifers will buy these things, put them in their rigs, and find out very quickly that it's terrible. Even Foresty Forrest had one of these things for years until he realized he was using incredible amounts of power just to keep this thing going. And he was in Canada, where he didn't need as much cooling as the rest of us. So, yeah, Dominic and everyone else, stay away from Peltier devices for cooling in your rig. It just isn't the way to do it. Somebody else asked me, seeing an old video of mine, about towing with the NV200. So the NV200, van made by Nissan, very popular. My first built-out van was an NV200. It's a cute little city van kind of a thing, similar to a Transit Connect or a ProMaster City. It was also sold as the City Express by Chevy, but it's exactly the same van. They stopped making them in 2021, I think, or 2022, at least in the U.S. New York City cabs were all supposed to be made out of these vans, so they're very common. So the question is, can you tow with them? Now, if you look in the owner's manual of an NV200, you will see that towing rating is zero. Zero. You cannot tow with these, according to the owner's manual. However, Kurt and other brands, Drawtight, I think, they sell hitches for these things. So why does an NV200 have a tow hitch available for it if you can't tow? Well, there's two reasons. The first reason is that tow hitches are good for other things, too. You can put bike racks on there. You can put storage racks on there. They're just a handy place to attach things to the back of the vehicle. My wife's Scion IQ has a tow hitch. Believe me, you don't want to tow anything with that. But, like my smart car, the NV200 can tow. It is not recommended in the owner's manual, but you can do it. You're taking some risks. So I towed with both my smart car and my NV200, but under very specific conditions. I towed a motorcycle trailer. I had a camper. It was called a Time Out travel trailer. It's basically a metal box on wheels that you tow behind your vehicle, meant for a motorcycle, but no reason why you can't tow it with a car. And then when you get to your campsite, you unfold it and everything, and you end up with this very big tent that had a queen-size bed and a table. I mean, it was impressive. It took a really long time to set up, but it was very impressive that all this came out of that box. So how did I get away with towing that with these vehicles? The answer is it just didn't weigh very much. That travel trailer weighed less than 500 pounds, and that's the big problem. The smart car is just a wimpy little car, and that's why you can't tow with it. That's easy to understand. The NV200 is a cargo van with a 1,500-pound payload capacity. Why can't you tow with that? I mean, the engine is fine. The answer is it's the transmission. NV200 has a CVT transmission, and it's difficult to tow with those because they tend to overheat. And one of the frustrating things about the NV200 is that the transmission has no temperature gauge. I'm not even sure it has a transmission cooler, and you just don't know what you're doing to your transmission. I bought an aftermarket scan gauge that, read from the OBD2 port and gave me all the readings I could ever want, but there isn't a setting for the transmission. There's literally no sensor in there. So I couldn't even tell if I was damaging the transmission or not. Now, I did not experience any problems directly while towing. Braking was fine. There's no issue there. And again, little tiny trailer, it was fine. But it isn't recommended, and I don't think you should go over 500 pounds ever, really. If you're going to do occasional trips with something like mine, I think it's totally fine. Also, I'll add that I did have some problems with the transmission later on. Not while I was towing, but while I was going up hills out west. I think it was overheating. I would be going up a hill at speed, and everything would stop for some reason, and something was going into limp mode of some sort. I'd pull over, turn the key off, turn it back on, and it would be fine. And then I had the transmission fluid changed, which in the NV200 is not recommended ever. It's lifetime transmission fluid, which I think is crazy. I found a shop that would do it, but anyway, they replaced the fluid for me, and that fixed the problem. So, Anyway, yeah, you can tow with vehicles that you can't tow with, I guess is what I'm trying to say. You just have to understand why you can't tow with it and what happens if you do. So, not recommended for long term, but doable if you're willing to take the risks. I made a video that did very well on YouTube about a head unit that I put in my Dodge. It's not a Dodge. It's a Ram. It's a Ram 1500 Classic pickup truck. Lots of popularity with this video. And because of that, I'm getting a lot of people sending me stereos to put in this truck. I mean, I would be replacing the stereo in this truck every week if I followed up on all of these. And that is not my business. They're all basically the same stereo. There's like this stereo that is made in China, and all these companies are buying the shell of it and then adding their own software and layers and stuff. So they're all very similar. But I've done two now. I did the Junson, which is the one that's on YouTube right now. And then another company whose name I'm not going to say sent me one. And they sent it to me in, I think, February. And I installed it, and it's been in ever since. And it has never worked right. And I've been working with them back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And they've given me all kinds of software updates and AFKs and all these things to try to get it to work right. And they have fixed all the problems, which I give them credit for. Every single problem that I had, they have fixed, except for one. There's this weird problem where with CarPlay, the volumes get screwed up. So you have many different volume settings on a flat screen stereo in your car. You've got the volume of the music, you've got the volume of the navigation, you've got the volume of the system announcements, etc. Depends on what you're doing, but there's all these things have different volumes, and this device and my iPhone fight for some reason. And what happens is that all the Siri and navigation notifications, all that, whatever channel that comes through on, is distorted. It's too loud. There's too much gain. And if I could find the volume setting for that, I could fix it. But I can't. There isn't one. And this is one of the major complaints about Apple. It's like driving a car with the hood welded shut. Well, this is a good example of that. There's no setting for these volume controls. The way it is normally controlled in these stereos is that while that voice is playing, like let's say it's giving you navigational instructions, if you turn or use the volume controls at that moment, that will adjust the volume for that particular thing. However, it doesn't work with this one. And it's incredibly frustrating. It's a nice stereo. It has front and rear cameras. So when you put it in reverse, you can swap between the front and rear. I mean, I would like to recommend it, but without this problem being fixed, I can't. And so I've been going back and forth with them. They actually sent me a new unit, thinking that maybe I got a defective unit, but that didn't fix it. I'm still working with them. I mean, here we are, it's June, and this still hasn't been resolved, and they've got to be frustrated that they sent me a brand new stereo, actually two, and I haven't given them a video yet. But I don't think they want me to give them a bad review, which is what I would have to do right now if I made the video. So, I don't know. I'll keep working with them, and you know, I'll offer to send them back if that's what they want. I don't know. But right now, I can't recommend it. And I've got like three other offers to do videos like this sitting in my inbox, and I'm like, well, maybe that'll fix it. But this is not my business. I am not the Ram 1500 Classic Stereo Review Guy. There's other people doing that. So anyway, I've just given you that as general information of how these things work. Lauren, who I met at VanFest, sent me a note asking me to take a look at what's going on in Missouri, the show me state. Missouri has a lot of free camping, which is great. They have a lot of land, over 300 different areas where you can camp for free legally in the state on all state-owned land. It's wonderful. I've spent many, many, many nights camping in Missouri, and it's an easier place to camp than most, despite new laws and such. However, they are now going to start charging fees to camp in these places. And I am of mixed feelings about this. On one hand, of course, I like free camping. And I would like to see that preserved as much as possible. But on the other hand, I think what Missouri is doing here is fairly reasonable. The problem is that these campsites are not being treated well by the people staying there. They're being trashed. There's all kinds of complaints. And without people paying, there's no registration of who is where. And it's difficult for law enforcement to get in there and do anything about it. For example, if you have somebody who's repeatedly trashing these areas, there's no way to track them because they're not registered in any way. All you find is these trashed campsites. So while normally I would claim that this was, you know, just a cash grab for the state, or they were trying to do some kind of a homeless tax again, which we've seen many, many states do, when I looked at what the fees were, I realized that isn't what they're doing, because the fees are more than reasonable. How much would you pay to stay for 5 nights at a campground? If the answer is $5, and I don't mean per night, I mean for the entirety of your stay, well then, Missouri is for you, because that's what they're proposing. A $5 fee for a group of up to 10 in size to stay for 5 nights at any one of these 300 campgrounds. I can't complain about that too much. I think that's a reasonable step, given that they're having problems. Now, you can introduce all the slippery slope arguments you'd like. Well, that's $5 this year. Next, it's going to be $5 a night, then $10, then $20. I mean, yeah, that's very possible. We've seen that pattern many, many times before. So this action, I don't think, is that heinous. It does open the door to more heinous actions, and we've seen plenty of them. So it's a something to watch. But I'm going to give Missouri a little bit of credit here for taking action without overstepping. And I hope this works out for them. I hope that this simple fee that really isn't a burden too much on anybody will solve the problem. They don't have to do anything else. My concern is, of course, that they will suddenly see, oh, well, if we can get $5, maybe we can get $7 or $10 or $5 a night. And you see how that goes. Welcome to living in capitalism. Okay. A totally other topic. I have been getting email from people saying, hey, thank you for doing the podcast. I really enjoy listening to it. And I always love those emails. Those are the emails that I'm like, oh, there are people out there listening. That's great. However, I've been getting more and more of them lately. And that's not because people are enjoying the podcast more and more. It's because they're fake. I get so many fake emails that go something like this. In fact, I'll read you one. How's that? I am going to read you an email, and I'll withhold their name. I don't need to be mean to these people, but this is the email I got. Hi, Jeff. A friend recently recommended I listen to Built to Go, and I'm so glad they did. I just listened to your episode on stupid but useful things and really enjoyed the conversation. Remember that word. So I thought I'd reach out. I'm Redacted, the founder and CEO of Redacted. Sorry, I'm not going to give them away. That I started when I was 23 years old. I launched the company while traveling solo and am passionate about helping people travel to experience new, unexpected places. My husband and I also have a Sprinter van, and we've spent most of the last year traveling in the van! It's been my absolute dream to run my business from the road. If you're currently booking guests, I'd love to come on and chat about all things travel and entrepreneurship from the road. Either way, I'll definitely keep listening. Looking forward to future episodes, and I hope to hear from you soon. Well, that's a nice note, isn't it? Except that I've gotten many, many notes like that, and many worded exactly the same. And the thing that tipped me off that this wasn't actually a real email is that it has the word conversation. As you know, I don't typically have guests on the show, while most podcasts do. Most podcasts assume that there's a guest. This one doesn't. And that tipped me off that this was an AI-written template that is simply taking the last podcast episode that any podcast has made and writing this script for it and sending it to the owner of that podcast, hoping to get this person on the show so that they can pump their product, whatever it is. And I'm okay with that. You know, if this person had contacted me genuinely, I probably would have had him on the show because it sounds like they have some stuff that is related to van life. But I was feeling a little cheeky that day, and I wrote them back and said, I know this was AI, and, you know, what would we even talk about? Well, they wrote back, and this time it was the actual person, and they say, I'll admit you're correct. I just signed up for a platform called PodPitch to reach out to podcasts. Thanks for the call out. And I'm going to go back and work on the outreach. So I'll give them credit for that. But and also giving me the information. This product is called PodPitch. And basically, you give this company money and they will write to all the podcasts that are on your topic and then, you know, try to get you a spot on there as a guest. And, well, anyway. Yeah, no. I don't know if their product is any good, and I just don't. You've heard me on the show that I'm actually in favor of a lot of AI things. I am not in favor of this AI thing because this is an abuse of AI, in my opinion. I think it is wrong to use AI to represent you as something you're not, especially to suggest that you're listening to a podcast that you're not. This pattern repeats over and over and over again. They always refer back to the last episode and then mention some specific things about the episode and then ask to be a guest on a podcast that doesn't have guests. I know they haven't listened to the episode, so. Anyway, I'm just pointing that out, and person who wrote this particular email, if you really are listening, I want you to write me with the very words, I really am listening. If I get an email from you that says, I really am listening, you and I will absolutely sit down and do a guest spot on the podcast. Okay, what is going on with all the stuff that I said that I was going to be working on and then you never heard from again? Remember the man in the arena thing. I try new things all the time, and a lot of them simply don't work. And that's okay. I mean, that is the price of being in the arena. We're so used to seeing people doing things, and, you know, they're just a success, right? Like Adam Savage, right? Big success. Did Mythbusters, has his podcast vlog, whatever you want to call it now, that is super popular, doing all kinds of things, meeting all kinds of cool people. And one of the very few people that I met who is actually the person they seem to be. I have no bad things to say about Adam Savage, and that puts him on a tier that is above almost every famous person I've met, okay? So I have nothing but respect for Adam Savage, and now I'm trying to remember why I brought him up. Oh, I brought him up because he did a talk at the Amazing Meeting. You can Google that if you want to. I'm not going to talk about it again. Where he went over simply all the times he had utterly failed. He had started these projects and they utterly collapsed and didn't go anywhere. And you never hear about them because he's a famous, successful person and all you hear about is the fame and success. But in order to get to that fame and success, most people have to do a whole lot of failure. Also, some people aren't after fame and success, like me. I'm not looking for fame, and I'm looking for success as I define success, not as the way someone else defines success. And for me, this podcast has been a success. And there you go. That's the end of it for me. Back to the original thing. What about all these things I said I was going to do, and have I done them or not? And well, I want to talk about three of them. The first is Peregrinus, the other podcast that I started and then seemed to have just abandoned in the middle. Yeah, I think I've abandoned that, and it's because I am focusing on these other things right now. I don't hate the idea of it. Basically, it was a podcast based on some of my blog writing that I was doing, and now that I've got these other two writing projects, I've kind of put that on the back burner, and that's where it's going to sit. So, okay, that's how it is. That's what life is like when you try new things and you're willing to risk failure. I don't know that I consider that failure necessarily because it never really got to where I wanted it to be to begin with. But for now, that's on hold. The Van Life book that I talked about, I actually did write. The rough draft is complete. I have all the words down on the paper. It's a really weird book. It's a book that's a quiz. You basically go through the book taking a quiz, and your answers to the quiz will lead you to things with the ultimate goal of telling you if van life is a good fit for you. Of course, it's based on my opinion. This isn't science we're talking about here. But I think it would be super valuable for someone starting out van life. You basically read through the book and you answer the questions with, it's multiple choice. How concerned are you about wildlife? And then there's five answers. And depending on which answer you pick, I will tell you, well, here's, you should think about this, you should think about that. And at the end, there's a score, and you can score yourself on how much van life will suit you. That's the idea of the book. I think it's an interesting book. I am going to finish it. But, well, it's finished. It's in rough draft. I need to edit it and then publish it. But before I do that, I have to finish writing the rough draft of the Aurora book. The Aurora book is an enormous project, and I really had no idea just how big it was when I started it last fall. I'm at 75,000 words now, and I'm probably going to be over 100,000 by the time I'm done, and that is a fairly sizable book. I don't think this book should be that long. This is the rough draft, and rough drafts are almost always longer than the finished draft, so there's a lot of stuff in there that's going to be cut or honed. But boy, there's a lot in this book. This book has been an emotional roller coaster. I'm writing this book, and it's really hard for me to believe that all the things in this book happened, and they happened to me. So there's something in here. This book is going to be finished. It is going to be published. I don't know how yet. I've got people encouraging me to go through traditional publishing, but that traditional publishing model has really... It's not the way it used to be, and they take a lot of control away from you, which I'm not sure I'm willing to give up, and it takes forever. Even if you find a publisher and they agree to publish your book, it's going to be years before that thing sees the light of day, and I don't know if I want that. I have to think about that, but before I think about that, I have to actually finish the book. I've talked with two different well-known writers about the book. Both think this is a worthy project, and I'm going to start some sort of a mentorship with one of them soon, I hope. And so I don't know when this book will see the light of day, but I've got 7 chapters left that I have to rough out, and then I can go back in the editing process. And the one mentor person I'm working with right now that we haven't signed a contract yet, but I'm looking forward to doing that, she recommends 7 rewrites, so that's going to take some time. But I get it. I understand. And anyway, this book will exist, and I will certainly let you know where you can get a copy when it's done. I also will turn it into an audiobook with me narrating. Since I talk into the microphone all the time, I figure I might as well be the narrator. And we'll see how that goes. But that project is still happening. I just don't talk about it much because when I'm not doing the podcast stuff or all the travel stuff, I'm doing the writing stuff. So it's kind of always in my mind, but I have to switch gears when I do these other things. All right. I got an email from somebody about politics on my podcast. And the policy of the podcast is no politics, no religion. However, politics and religion do sometimes impact van life, and I mention them. And sometimes I break that rule. Let's be clear. Politically, I am an independent. I look at each issue independently of whatever any party is telling me to look at. But I can also say that I'm very disappointed in the current administration. Disappointed isn't even the right word. I could insert a lot stronger language there, because this current administration has done a lot specifically related to this podcast to hurt van life and people who do van life. And there's countless examples. So, that's as much politics as you're ever going to get from me, I hope, on this podcast. But somebody wrote, kind of asking me to get more political, and I've gotten email from both sides of the political spectrum. I got an email asking me not to fall for the traps that were being set by the Black Lives Movement, and I also got an email saying that I really need to do more to call out the current spate of white supremacy. You can see that this podcast is apparently reaching a wide spectrum of folks, which is good. This is a big tent. We're not here to talk about politics. We're here to talk about van life. So I've accomplished my goal that by not talking about politics, that doesn't interfere with things, but I am getting emails about it. So anyway, that's my stance on the politics thing. I do not want to talk about politics. Everybody else is talking about politics. There's 8 gazillion political podcasts that will be narrowly tuned to whatever your political whims are. I'm really only interested in talking about politics on this podcast as it relates to van life. And unfortunately, it has been relating more and more. And I hope that trend changes. And one last thing, we're going to leave on a good note. Guess what? Fiat, Stellantis, Ram, whatever you want to call this company. I guess we'll call them Ram since they make the ProMaster. Guess what they're doing? They're making a platform for camping. So this hopefully is going to be a better effort than the The Ford Transit Trail, which was a freaking disaster. I called this thing out as soon as it came out. It had the trappings of van life, but it was not a rig suited for van life. And eventually they had to recall the things because the wheels they put on there that looked really tough and off-road didn't actually fit on the vehicle and were like rubbing against the fenders. Anyway, not a big fan of the Ford Transit Trail. Like the Ford Transits, great, good van. The van I recommend, if you can pick a van to do van life in, I think a Ford Transit makes the most sense. But not the Trail. It's just silly. But let's talk about the ProMaster. So they have basically a van life version of the ProMaster coming out. Now, this is not a built-out van. This is a van that can be converted into something suitable for van life. And there are not a lot of articles or information about this van yet. But it has these things. It has, for some reason, it's black. All right, fail number one. Black is not a good color for van life. But okay, it looks cool. It has swiveling front seats. That's a good one. That's a pain in the butt option to install in many cases because where the parking brake is. So the front seats will swivel around. That's good. The sliding door has glass in it. Okay, that's good, but that wasn't exactly rare. And the back doors have hinges. All right. What did they have before? I don't even know what that means. Rear hinged back doors. So I'm reading an article from Car and Driver here, and it looks like they're going to actually call this the ProMaster Van Life. But the only difference is that it's a bundle of features that exist already that you couldn't get all together, and now it's built into the ProMaster configurator. So I'll keep following this, but I will say that even though this may not be, you know, the ultimate ready-to-go van life van that you're going to build out, it's progress. It's positive. It shows that the van makers are realizing that, hey, we buy a lot of vans, and we do things with them, and there are things they could do that could make them more attractive. And, you know, hopefully that will carry forth. But pricing remains a problem. Right now, the cheapest ProMaster you can get is the 118 wheelbase, which is also the smallest van you can get until the ProMaster City comes back. Element Van Life, he is in one of these now, but they start at $46,370, brand new, empty, and that's at the tradesman trim level, which is the lowest trim level. The tradesman level of my truck doesn't even have a glove box compartment door. It's just a hole in the dashboard that whatever you put in there is obviously just going to fall out. But this is a cheap trim. It's also only low roof. But actually, it's a great size for van life. I really like the 118-inch wheelbase ProMaster, but they're rare and crazy expensive. $46,370. To go up to the 136-inch wheelbase, which is a significantly larger vehicle, is $49,000. And then when you get into the high roof, the cheapest high roof they have is the 136 high roof at $49,925. And then if you want to get into the long wheelbase, the 159-inch for the ProMaster, it's $52,300. We're talking about a lot of money here for stuff. And all those quotes were at the tradesman level. If you go to the higher levels, you have to add a few thousand dollars more. And those higher levels give you things that you want, like heated mirrors and more glass and more comfortable seats, etc. I mean, in most of these cases, if you want the SLT, which is that trim level, I mean, you want that. It is a good thing. Anyway, talk too much about that, but hey, at least there's an idea that these van-making companies care about us a little bit. So as you're reading this, I am at RMSS, the Rocky Mountain Star Stair in Colorado, and we're getting set up to spend a weekend looking at the stars and whatever other objects are floating about up there in the heavens under dark skies, because this is the weekend of the new moon, which is how they always do this. The new moon means there is no moon, and the moon is in the shadow of the earth, meaning that the sky is very, very dark in this place that is already very, very dark. So we should be able to see some very cool things. And I will be out there in my truck camper. because I have not built out my project that I had been planning on doing all the time, because there's so much going on that is just opportunity after opportunity that I have to grab when I can, and stuff gets pushed aside, and that's what's getting pushed aside now. But I have to tell you, I have that sitting on stands in my property right now, and I go in every once in a while, and I just love it in that space. There is something about this cap that fits on the back of the truck. It's self-enclosed. It has a floor. I've talked about it before. That is where I want to be. I've got an office chair in there and a generous-sized desk that I built, and it is just a nice place to be. So I am very excited about finishing that project. I just had no way I was going to do it before RMS. So I will be taking the Travel Light truck camper out there that I've talked about before, the one that had the wrens living in it. I'm going to be taking that out again. And my gas mileage, which is normally 22 or 23 in my Ram 1500 Classic, will drop to 11. And not in the good way. So I'm glad gas prices have come down a little bit, because I will be spending a lot of money for gas. And this is the last thing I wanted to talk to you about. I'm going to be spending twice as much money for gas as I would if I were just taking my truck out, which is hundreds of dollars, because I'm going all the way to Colorado. It's a big trip. So hundreds of dollars. Why do this? Because for hundreds of dollars, I could stay in hotels. Why even bother bringing the camper? And I have thought about that. I thought, well, you know, I could just throw a tent in the back. I've got a tent. I've got the cooking gear. There are porta potties on site. I can bring all kinds of water. I mean, literally, I don't need to bring the truck camper to do this trip. So why spend the hundreds of dollars to do it? And the only answer I can come up with is that I like it. I like having the camper with me. I like being able to stop wherever I want and have a nap or make some soup or grab a drink out of the fridge. I just like that. And I've put a lot of work into this truck camper to get it to be livable. It is livable. It's nice in there. So that's why I'm doing it. Is that a good enough reason? That's an individual decision. There are definitely been times in my life where I would not have been willing to spend hundreds of dollars extra just for the convenience of having a truck camper versus a tent. But this is not one of those times. So that's what I'm doing. You make your own decisions on what you're doing, but sometimes it's not about the money. Everything you do can be done cheaper. Why aren't you doing it that way? When you answer that question, you will have the answer as to why I am taking the truck camper. So until next time, thank you for listening to this rather odd episode. Music, as always, is by Simon Wagg. And if you need to get a hold of me, I am jeff@builttogo.com. That's two T's, not three, not one. And until next time, consider those words by Teddy Roosevelt. Do you want to step in the arena? The arena can give you success, and it can give you failure. And most of the time, it will give you failure. But are you willing to step in? Because stepping in is its own success.